And so I'm recording it, and you may record it also. My plan is to put this up on the webpage later this evening. Yes. Other questions? Okay, so then as I say, you should read through all the problems, looking for which ones are tricky, and you should also identify what kind of problem it is so that you have some idea what type of techniques might be needed. And then the last thing to keep in mind is about what you need to pass. So passing is often a little bit more than 50%, although it does vary by exam. So, you know, like 60% or something, a little bit more than 50%, slightly higher on average in the algebra one, but not always. So if you get like four of the problems very cleanly written up, then you're in good shape. So you don't want to miss some easy one and focus instead on hard ones, because you don't need to get all of them right. Okay, so as I said, I'm going to bring up an exam and let you just sort of read through all of them and figure out what type of problem it is, so what basic techniques you need to approach it, and then we'll just have a little discussion of which ones we think are easy, and then I'll switch to a bunch from a specific topic. Okay, let me do that. So there are a couple ways I can do this. Let me know what works best for you. So I can just share my screen here with the problems. It's also on the course webpage, so you can just link to it there. And finally, if it's convenient, I could also put the link into the chat. So would that be helpful for anyone? Yes, okay, so let me try that. So I had trouble getting that to work this morning. Let me see if I can do it now. So So this is where it came from, by the way. It's on my web page here. I think that should be the link. Okay. All right, so is that working for everyone? Very good. Okay, so as I said, why don't we just spend a couple of minutes and kind of read through them and see if you have questions about what they mean or what basic topic they would be, and try to figure out what that would be, and then identify which one you would start with, which one will be the easiest. I'll give you like first few minutes to do that. She said, does anyone want another minute or so to look at this before we start running through it? Okay, all right, so let's try this. So let me try to use the annotation thing here. So let's start with what type of problem it is and what sort of thing you would expect to have to use to address this. So let's start with the first one. So what kind of problem would you say that is? What type of material would be required?
Representation theory.
Yeah, this is definitely representation theory. And when looking at it, what's the most sort of interesting aspect of these representations?
That we're looking at a cyclic group.
The cyclic group is important, yep. But the other thing that you should be very careful to notice is that these are real.
Oh.
Right? And so they're going to behave a little bit differently from complex ones, a little bit more complicated. Perversely. Right. Okay, any other comments on that one? Okay, and number two.
Module theory?
Yep. Okay, right. And let's see, and actually, do you know something about modules of this type? Oops, sorry.
Structure theorem?
Yeah, that's right. So this is a PID, so you can have, so there's a structure theorem for it. So pick up the pen before it becomes visible to you. All right. Right. Okay, and then of course you have to remember the definition of projective. Or at least some properties, enough properties to get what you want. All right, so then number three.
Modules as well.
Yeah, these are also modules, right? What's the sort of the biggest difference then between two and three? So this ring is not required to be commutative. So these is sort of non-commutative, or possibly non-commutative. Okay, and. Unlike the polynomial ring. All right, and let's see, number four.
Wedderburn theorem?
Yes, that should be the right thing to think of. Right, okay. And then these things also come up, right? So there's a structure theorem for abelian groups also. Finitely generated abelian groups. Okay, and number five.
Group theory, I guess.
Yeah, basically that was pretty direct. Just direct group theory. Okay, and this last one about nilpotents. What's that?
More group theory.
Yeah, it's more group theory. And again, I you might want to try to remember properties of nilpotents, but with most of these, the other thing I would suggest is just play around with it a little bit and see what you can do. Because I think you can do this one, you can do kind of directly. Okay, so then finally, let's just put over here which one we would start with. So which one do you think is easiest? And let me just try this. I tried it last time, but we only used it a few times, but maybe we can use it more. But see if you can just use the comments, annotation. So what I'm doing, we should all be able to do it and just mark the ones you think are the easiest ones to start with. Yeah, okay. So there's some disagreement, but pretty strong view that this is the easiest. And notice that it's way down near the bottom. So it would have made sense to read through all of these first before deciding which ones to get started on. Okay, any other thoughts or comments on this exam before what I want to do now is switch to some other problems that are all focused on linear algebra and canonical forms. Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, I've just have like a question in particular of a problem, I think.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand.
That I have a particular question about one of these problems, I think.
Oh, okay, what would that be?
It's like, for example, in problem 6, if we have an element, let's say like y squared or something, like we still need to prove that that's not trivial, right? Like we still, like if we want to say like, oh, this is in this group, and then, yeah, like.
I see what you're saying, yes. Right, because in general, of course, it's a very hard problem to determine whether, in fact, unsolvable. But the you should do that. In this particular case, as actually with most cases, it's not that hard to show that elements are non-trivial. But yes, if you're going to argue that, say, y squared is in, the kth term of the Lorentz center series or something for every element, for all k, and therefore it's not nilpotent, something like this. Yes, you would have to argue that that's not the identity element, correct? Yeah.
Dr. Babson, do you happen to know what the passing score for this exam was?
Oh, that is a very good question. I don't, but I will see if I can find that information. That's actually a good piece of information to have, because I was hoping to sort of do different exams like this every day, and if I knew the passing scores for each one, that would be useful. I don't know it offhand, though. Other questions? Okay, so then if there are no further thoughts on this, then I'll move to the other list of problems. Okay. All right, and I think I can do something similar to what I just did. And again, it's just linked here on my webpage, so I'm just going to click on it from there, and then I can look at that, except that it's not there. All right, let me try to find it. I had it here a minute ago. I don't know where it went. Okay, not sure why I can't get that file up. All right, well, let's see. Let me give you the first problem and then work on that the file while you work on that problem. So the first problem is from fall, and I'll put it on this other screen. Okay, and so this is fall 2016 number 3. And it says the following, show that every linear map A from R3 to R3
Eric, that
mm-hmm.
It looks like there's an issue with the math website.
That might explain it because it is going through there. Thank you. Okay.
For what it's worth, I was able to access that file at like 10 minutes before we started.
Okay. I thought I was too. So, okay. Thank you. Actually, if you have it, you can just share it. Let me have it. But,
No, I closed it out. I didn't save a copy. Sorry.
That's all right. But maybe if someone just called the math. Well, anyway, I'll write out this first one and then see what I can do. Because I also have the file other places, so maybe I can transfer it. Okay, but anyway, so this has both a one- and two-dimensional invariant subspace. Has both a one-dimensional and a two-dimensional invariant subspace. Okay. All right. Yeah. So feel free to play with that for a few minutes. First, are there any questions about what it means?
Yeah. What does invariant mean here?
Right. Okay. So it just means that the map takes it to itself. So X subspace of R3 is invariant. If AX is contained in X, or equivalently, for every little x in X, we have that AX is also in X. It might not be the same element, so it's just somewhere possibly different in X. Make sense? Okay, let's see. Math problem still seems to have been solved, but here's the file. So any thoughts about ideas how one might approach this?
I have an idea.
Okay.
So A must have at least one real eigenvalue. This is because the characteristic polynomial for A has to be of degree 3.
Okay.
Complex roots come in pairs for polynomials over the reals. Okay. So there has to be at least one real eigenvalue.
Okay. So can you guys see what I'm writing? I cannot on one of my computers.
I cannot.
Okay. I'm trying to, not sure why that's true. Okay. All right. Anyway, that's, I agree with you. So maybe I'll switch back into the other board where you can see what I'm writing, and I'll just write what you're saying. So, right. So your idea was we have to have at least one real eigenvalue, correct? All right, and then what?
The eigenspace will be of, but I don't know how to show that it has to have exactly one-dimensional invariant subspace. This eigenvalue, if it's of dimension 1, then we're good to go.
Okay.
If it is of dimension 2, then we've shown that there's at least one two-dimensional invariant subspace, because invariant, yes. Okay, once we've shown that it has either a 1 or a 2-dimensional invariant subspace, for vector spaces, invariant subspaces are direct summands of the vector space. Mm-hmm. And the other direct summand must be of dimension 2 if our original eigenspace was of dimension 1, or vice versa.
Okay, so that sounds like a good start there. So okay, so let's see. So all right, so we started out here. We had this at least one real eigenvalue. Okay, and so we have a non-trivial real eigenspace. So with eigenspace. V, and let's see, and so you had some cases. So one, if the dimension of, so you got a one-dimensional invariant subspace, no matter which, how big V was, right?
That's right.
Okay, so any one-dimensional subspace of V works. Okay, and then for the two-dimensional one, so that one's actually a little bit trickier. So so one idea was to look at the a summand. Okay, so does anyone see a problem with that?
I think that we are assuming that the transformation is diagonal. Well, you can convert it into a diagonal operator.
That's right. That's right. So this is there is such a sum decomposition, but it's not canonical, right? And so there are lots of different W's that'll work, and it could be that the W that you choose is not invariant. So your function might, your matrix in say a basis here X and Y might be something like it takes X to itself, so that's fine, but it takes Y over to X plus Y, something like that, right? Right. So, okay, so we got the one-dimensional one. Okay, that looks good. But then, what to do about the two-dimensional one? Okay, so were there other thoughts about how to deal with the two-dimensional one?
We can convert it into an RX module.
Okay.
Yeah, and then we could use, I can't remember the exact theorem, but we do like Rx, like mod the first like linear term, and then the one that doesn't split could be like x squared or plus or ax. I guess you'd have the coefficients as well, so you'd have like ax squared plus bx squared plus c, and those would be like direct sums, right?
That sounds right. So you're giving me the so this is the same thing that came up in the exam, right? This is the classification for modules over PID, right? That you're using here, right? And so you had one that looked like x minus lambda if we had a single eigenvalue of lambda, and then there are various possibilities, but you mentioned this one is one possibility, right? It could be something like x minus mu squared or something for the second term. Okay, so, right. Yeah, and so I guess one thing to do then would be to remember what the general form of this is, and then see if you can get deal with each case separately, right? So, for example, it could be that it has exactly the form that that we have here, right? It could be that you have one eigenvalue lambda, another eigenvalue mu, and this one occurs squared. So let's just think through briefly, if you remember how this works. So what's the dimension? What do the eigenspaces look like for this for a matrix that has this structure for its associated module? Let me be more precise. What are the, how many eigenspaces are there? So let me write out a matrix that has this property. So e.g., A is equal to lambda. So this is going to give me this first one, and then it's going to have some mu's. But this is our mu squared, so it's going to look like this. Okay, so does that make sense? So sort of you can view it in terms of modules, or you can write it in terms of a basis as a matrix. Any questions about that? Okay, so
I have a question.
Okay, yep.
So writing the matrix in this canonical form, I'm trying to remember the precise details, but I think it was this, in order to be able to write the matrix in this canonical form, mu has to be a real number?
Correct.
Okay. And, but we're not guaranteed that it has all real eigenvalues.
That's correct. So this is a single case. This is one case, and there are more cases.
Oh, I see. Okay, thank you.
Yep, that's right. So it does not have to have this form, correct. In fact, if it has a one-dimensional eigenspace of size lambda, we could list all of them. Maybe we should just list all of them just so that it's clear what the possibilities are. So it could be that it's... but actually, before I do that, let me just finish the question that I had here. When we look at this particular example, what can anyone tell me what the dimensions of the eigenspaces are? It's a little bit of a trick.
1 and 2.
See, that's incorrect, unfortunately. That's what one would have hoped, but it's not true. It's because of this. That's right. They're both one-dimensional. This has a two-dimensional and a one-dimensional invariant subspace associated with it, they're both just one-dimensional. There's just one vector. The 1, 0, 0, of course, has an eigenvalue 1, lambda, but only 0, 0, 1 has eigenvalue mu, right? Because if I try to multiply it by something like this, right, I don't get just mu times it back, right? So the only the only eigenvectors for mu are multiples of 0, 0, 1. So they're both one-dimensional. So it has two one-dimensional eigenspaces only. Yeah, that's right. Okay, so but now we can just list what all the possibilities are. Let's say that we figured out this lambda, which we knew had to be there, some real number that had to be a root. And so now we can just start listing. So let me just start and chime in if you can think of one that I missed. So M is isomorphic to, well, let's see, we could start with something like Rx mod x minus lambda cubed. And so this will have the, this also has a Jordan form, which, as you pointed out, it need not, but this one does, right? We could have, so this would be number two, this is number one that we have up there. Let's see, we could have R join X, it could be that there's a X minus lambda squared, okay, then there's gonna be one other root, right? And so that's gonna have to be of this form. And so that's gonna look a lot like one, so three like one. Okay, it could be that we have something like M isomorphic to Rx. Okay, it could be that there's just one copy of X minus lambda. Okay, and now it could be that it has this form, but it could be that it has two roots. Okay, and so this is diagonalizable. But I'm missing one. What's the remaining thing that can happen? Just think about the different ways that a real degree three polynomial can factor.
X squared plus mu x plus tau?
Exactly, yeah. So it could be some irreducible degree two polynomial whose roots are complex, right? So those are the five possibilities. So you'd have to look now at each of those and find a two-dimensional invariant subspace for each of those. Okay. And so for which of those is it going to be easy to find a two-dimensional invariant subspace? So actually for most of them, the trick that you were suggesting at first of finding some sort of complement works, but there's one case where it doesn't. Okay, so that's a good one to think about, but here, this will be a two-dimensional space. And it'll be invariant. Here, this will be a two-dimensional space, and it'll be invariant. Here, this will be a two-dimensional space, which is invariant. And here, of course, this one will be, because one and three are basically the same. So this is the only one that's really interesting. And this is what the matrix looks like. So can anyone see what a two-dimensional invariant space is for this matrix?
Is the xy plane invariant?
It might be depending on what x and y are, but yes, that's
what's
possible. Yeah.
Like yeah.
If this is x and this is y and that's z, then yes. So in other words, if I take things of the form zero xy and multiply them by this matrix, I'm going to get something that still has that form, right? Because this is now going to be equal to, so the zero is going to stay there. And that's really all that mattered. But then we're going to get lambda x, and we're going to get lambda y plus x. Okay, so it's still inside of the space x. Okay. Right, so it's not back to the same value, but it is still inside. Okay, any questions about that one? So that might be a fun one to just try to write up because it's kind of messy, and so it's nice to sort of think through if there's a tidier way to get to all of the points that you want. Any further questions or thoughts about that one? Okay, what's that?
Yeah, can I ask a quick question? What would be enough to get on this problem to say pass it? Like if I knew everything except the module over PID composition, right?
Oh yeah, so you can do it without the module over PID. Actually, so can anyone tell me what the name of the form I would use is if I didn't even want to think about modules anywhere? I kind of like modules, but you don't have to.
Some form, normal form.
Yeah, like exactly. Form. Which, yeah, some canonical form, that's right. So for example, rational canonical form is a good one.
Rational.
Yeah. Anyway, there are various ones, as you note, but the things that we're going to be looking for is Jordan canonical form does not work, and why not?
Algebraically closed.
Exactly. Right, and we saw that because we had to actually do a little bit of work to indicate that we even had a single eigenvalue, right? So you could do it all in terms of a canonical form, and then you'll end up, these different forms that I wrote down will be, again, it's the same basic thought process. You have to think through what are the possible ways in which a degree 3 real polynomial can factor over the reals. And just as here, those will give you different, cases in your canonical form. And then you can do it all in terms of matrices and write down explicit spaces like the one that I guess I erased that was invariant for this one. Other questions? Yeah, so it's sort of up to you. I do like as the one person suggested, moving it into the modules because it enables me to put it all into this one theorem, the modules over PID, so that I can think through it in a similar way without missing any cases. Okay, other questions? Okay, so let's try another. So the site seems to be up again. So let me see if this time I can. Link to it correctly. Okay, and I should also be able to. Put it into the chat box. Although actually it might already be incorrectly. But there it is again. Okay. Yeah, sorry, I usually use this viewing program. All right. Okay, so let's see. So now either with the link or with the sharing, can people now all see this? It's a little bigger. The next problem. Okay, let me know if you cannot, but otherwise, let's just spend a minute or two and figure out how you'd approach this. Okay, let's see. So people have some thoughts about how to approach this.
Question. If we had a strong hunch of what the N is, but we're just kind of like, oh, how many points do you think that we would actually get?
That's not very many, I'd say. Yeah. Right answer is nice, but no, what we're looking for is some explanation. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, if that comes along with, you know, part of the argument, for example, an example that requires that, you know, that is a partial credit.
Okay.
But at this point, I'm happy to hear strong hunches as well. Yeah, anyway, sorry, what were you saying?
Yeah, I just kind of asked to clarify because I think I'm thinking of this incorrectly. But so for the second one,
mm-hmm.
It leaves infinitely many length one vectors fixed. If I had a one by one matrix, identity matrix, and it fixed every length one, what is, maybe I'm missing what this
what it means? Yeah, okay, let's try that. So if you had a one-by-one identity matrix, so just the matrix 1, then the length 1 vectors, it fixes every vector in R, right? But there are only 2 length 1 vectors in R. So this fixes 1 and minus 1. Those are the only 2 length 1 vectors, so there are only 2. If, however, you take the identity matrix on 2, then this fixes it fixes everything once again, but now there's a whole circle's worth, right? Here they're just the 2 points, but here there's a whole circle's worth of length one vectors, right? So it fixes anything in the form of sine x, cosine x. Right, so there are infinitely many. So this is finitely many, and this is infinitely many. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, so my strong hunch is that it's 4 because it's exotic and it's just weird. So I figured that.
All right. Let's see. Let's see if we can find other arguments that give the same that back up that that hunch. Yeah.
Can I say? Oh, so I think if you look at the matrix that looks like 0, 1, 0, 0. So when you multiply like a 2x2 matrix that looks like 0, 1, 0, 0, uh-huh. then you multiply it together, it actually reduces the rank. So I think if we would combine something like a identity matrix and this one on the diagonal, maybe it's like the 4 thing that Tony said.
Uh-huh. Okay, so you're suggesting a specific example, if I understand correctly, and it it looks like this one, 0, 1, 0, 0, and it's a block diagonal, and it has an identity down here. Is that correct? So you're taking this.
Oh, I'm just guessing. Yeah.
No, really I understand. But I'm just trying to understand what you were guessing so that I have it correct here, right? Okay. Okay, so let's just check. Does that one satisfy the two results? The two.
Well, I think that the first condition is telling us that M is not invertible. So that gives us 2 inequalities.
So let's just look at the first one. So case one, so it's true that it will not be invertible if that's true, right? But I'm not sure they're exactly the same statement, right? So so the rank of M squared less than the rank of M implies that M is not invertible. But can anyone think of a matrix that is not invertible that still satisfies condition one?
The zero matrix?
Correct. Yeah, that's a very good example. But it is not the other direction, because the rank of a zero squared is equal to the rank of zero is equal to zero, right? And zero is not invertible. Right. So it's not exactly the same statement. It does imply that it's not invertible, though. So you do have that. Anyway, sorry I interrupted you. So were you going to use that then for something?
Because the rank of M is less than N, then.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct. That's a very good point, actually. No, that is true. Thank you. So there you don't need if and only if, right? There you only are using, as you said, this one direction. And therefore, the rank of M is strictly less than N, correct? Yes, so that much we know.
Yeah, and the second condition is telling you that the space that is fixed has to have dimension at least 2, because otherwise you'll pass, like, we're just going to have 2 points fixed.
Correct, yes.
And that give us that N is at least 4. So we just have to give an example.
And there's an example, right? So because it does exactly what you just explained, right? And just as what the person who told it to us explained. This piece over here, I can't highlight with this. This piece over here, gives the deals with the drop in rank, and as you said, it requires the whole thing to have smaller rank. This piece is 1 shy, right? It's just rank 1, and then the square is 2 shy, so it's rank 0. And then it does exactly what you said here. You need that 2-dimensional space with eigenvalue of 1 eigenvectors with eigenvalue 1, and so that is essentially the argument. So both. We both got an example and an argument for where that has to be the smallest. Okay, so again, it's sort of playing around with canonical forms. And again, what we're trying to get is exactly this, this minimum rank. In some sense, you can be a little bit sloppy because it didn't really matter that that this first condition is not equivalent to here. We didn't this part, while it's not equivalent, it doesn't really matter. All you need is that this implies, condition one implies that the rank's not full, which is what you used. Okay. So when writing it up, it really throws a grader off if you make a false statement and then just use the part of it that's true. It's better to, you know, just say the true one. Okay. Other comments or questions about this problem? Okay, let's move on to the next. Okay, and so first, are there any questions about the meaning of any of the statements in this problem? Okay, so maybe we'll just, just to get started here, could someone just tell me what it means that T is a two-dimensional complex representation of the symmetric group S3?
T is a group homomorphism from S3 to a general linear group over the complex field.
Mm-hmm. And
where the group operation over GLC is multiplication.
That's correct. And where does that T come in?
Oh, GL2C.
Correct. That's right. Okay, so is that clear to everyone? So T of 1, 2, 3, so 1, 2, 3 is the name of an element of this group here. And so what is this object T of 1, 2, 3? What kind of thing is that?
Some matrix.
Right, and it's a 2x2 matrix over C. Right. Okay, so that's sort of the meaning of everything. Were people getting some ideas, or do you want to take another minute to think? Kelsey, so does anyone have any thoughts, ideas about how we might at least get some kind of restriction so that we, it's not just anything?
Well, since the matrix has to satisfy the equation x to the third power minus one, then T is invertible. I mean, like, yeah, like the image of 1 to 3 is invertible.
That's what you said, x cubed is identity?
Yeah, so the minimal polynomial, the minimal polynomial has different roots. So the matrix is invertible.
Okay, so x is invertible. You're thinking of it in terms of the characteristic polynomial, I guess. So you were thinking of, okay. But anyway, so this matrix is invertible.
Oh, sorry, I meant diagonalizable. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. All right. X is diagonalizable.
Mm-hmm. And like, and then the possible options diagonal are roots of that equation that we have there.
Let's say cube roots of unity. Right, so that's quite restrictive. Okay, so let's see. So now we're down to a pretty small list, right?
There are 2x2 matrix, right?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that's going to be even smaller. Thank you. Much smaller. Thank you. It was getting a little long. Good point. Yes. Okay, so now are all of these possible, and how would we know if all of them are possible?
I think that they are not all possible.
Okay.
We can study the homomorphism from S3 to the non-zero elements of C by applying the determinant to T.
Okay.
And then we can maybe get something there. Like,
okay.
I think that the determinant of T must be 1. I mean, like, of T of 1 to 3.
Okay, so let's see if I'm following your setup here. So we have this map. I kind of like to label the maps from S3 to T. And now you're going to continue then with the determinant, right, that takes us onto C, and which is a homomorphism of multiplicative groups. So now you're saying that this composition is something which is a map from S3 to C, and that we have some control over that.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, and so there are sort of two things to do now, right? So we have this nice finite list from using this good technique. So we can try to build up examples, or we can try to get rid of some more. So maybe we could try building some examples. So how would we find actually examples of what these T's can be?
We need to assign matrices to the I think that S3 is isomorphic to the dihedral group of Mm-hmm. Right? So I just need to assign matrices to the generators that satisfy the relations that they need to satisfy. Mm-hmm. And as long as they do, we can define that representation.
That's correct. Yes. Right. So maybe we can start. So are there any of these matrices that we're sure is possible that we just know a representation that works for? So I claim that if we assign them all to the identity, that works. So this is possible. Okay, so let me see. So mostly one person was talking. Are people following? Are there any questions about what we've worked out so far? Maybe if it's clear where we are, then maybe you should spend a couple of minutes trying to figure out which of these six actually arise. But now would be a good time to sort of try to clarify what's happening if people got lost in all that.
I have a question. So why is X diagonalizable from the equation X cubed is I?
Okay, that's a good question. Actually, yeah, did the person who told me that want to explain why this is diagonalizable?
Yeah, you can prove that if the minimal polynomial of a matrix doesn't have repeated roots, then it is diagonalizable. Yeah, actually, I think it's if and only if, but I don't remember.
It's not definitely, but so no repeated roots, that means that if you think of it in terms of the Jordan form, right, no repeated roots means that they're all different, and so you can't have Jordan blocks, but you could have repeated roots and still not have you could have two Jordan blocks with the same thing, right, then you get a repeated root. Oh, sorry, but you're talking about the minimal polynomial, so then actually you're correct. Then it is if and only if. Sorry. Yes. Okay. Did that answer your question?
Oh, yes. Okay. Sorry, I forgot to say that. Yes.
Okay, very good. Other questions about what's been worked out so far? Okay, very good. So what I would be thinking about also now is that this is representations of a group, and I know a lot about the representations of this particular group, so I can start writing down representations, and that'll give me some other way to build things, just using classification of representations of finite groups over C. Okay, so let's see. Why don't you just spend a minute or two and see if you can figure out which of these are possible, find a way to either eliminate some or to build more.
I think that, I feel that the solution that I have is really not beautiful.
That's okay. Whatever works, right? So, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are just two possible options, and there are that one that you marked, and the other one that's like to the right, all the way to the right.
Oh, all the way to the right. Okay.
Yeah, because I proved that the determinant has to be one.
Aha, okay.
Yeah, and doing that is not that fun because, because you do it by contradiction and then you need to do a couple of cases. But I'm pretty sure the determinant is one.
Okay, so what you would do it as a separate claim that the determinant has to be one, and then you'd prove that separately then, that's what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay, and then it's true that that reduces it just to these two. Okay, and what about constructions? Actually, so do people know some representations of S3 that you could just throw at this?
There's the identity representation.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also the one that takes a symmetric group to the parity of the elements.
Mm-hmm. So these are both one-dimensional?
Right, and then there's only one more irreducible representation of dimension 2,
mm-hmm.
which I believe takes each element to I don't remember.
Actually, let me draw a picture. There's a beautiful picture for it. It comes from the dihedral action. So you just think of the way that it acts on a triangle, and that's in R2. The reflection reflects, so it just acts geometrically. So if you can choose a basis here, and the 1, 2, 3 will be a rotation by a third. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Does that representation exist for symmetric group of any integer? Like if I had S4, like could I take like the symmetries of a square in R2, and that's a representation?
What you could take is the symmetry. So there is an analog, but what it is the symmetries of a tetrahedron in R3.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's right. But that is one of the standard representations. In this case, that's all of them. For other symmetric groups, there are more that you're missing this way. But yes, that is one of the nice representations that's always there. Yeah. Okay, and so you can just work out what that matrix is, and it will be, of course, the one that was suggested down here. Right, so these are a couple ways you can do it. You can use these irreducible representations, the fact that you know the irreducible representations, or you can try to build some sort of claim like this that tells you how to do the restrictions. Okay, any questions about how to approach this problem?
I have a question about how a problem like this would be graded. So if I came to this problem and I was able to, you know, I was able to construct these two matrices, 1, 1 and omega squared.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't really sure how to show that the other matrices you had written down weren't possible, and I moved on to another problem. Do you know about how that sort of answer might be graded?
Let's see. I mean, it would get a significant amount of credit. It would get a significant amount. So to actually prove that this one works over here, you pretty much have to write down a representation, right? And to do that, you kind of have to know something about what the possible representations are, or have some way like this one of actually building a representation. Anyway, that's what I'd say. You certainly get some credit for that, but it's not complete. Okay. So, are there any questions about how you could turn that into how you might turn that into a proof? So you could go home and write this up. Actually, what I would strongly recommend, as I did in the previous. In the analysis section is that tonight you choose one of the problems that we're talking about today and try to write it up carefully. You know, just first of all, it's just good practice to write things out carefully, and secondly, it makes it clear that something didn't get missed.
All right. I actually have a question about this. It's a pretty basic thing. I hope I just don't waste too much time, everyone's time. Okay. And so if we do the same thing to the element, let's say 1, 2, and see where it maps to, we also get something like this, can we call it Y, like the matrix?
The matrix, yeah.
So Y square is I, we can do the same thing and it's something, you know, we can do similar things. And is it true that like 1, 2 only has two options, the identity and also the
this particular one? I would have to work through whether you end up with just two options. So the thing to notice is that if you look at these irreducible representations, actually, can anyone tell me how many isomorphism types are there of two-dimensional representations of S3?
I'm sorry, what do you mean by isomorphism type?
Right. So two representations are isomorphic if you can take a linear map. So this is a representation, and they're isomorphic if they're equivalent, so if they differ by a conjugation on the right, or in other words, they act on vector space V and W, and there's a linear isomorphism that makes them the same. So it's just a change of basis. That's what I mean.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that, when you say that these are the only irreducible representations, that's what you mean, is that those are the only irreducible representations up to isomorphism, these three.
Okay.
Okay. So if I want to build two-dimensional representations up to isomorphism, can anyone see how to make use of the fact, I wish this thing behaved a little differently, that how I could make use of these facts here about the irreducible representations to figure out how many isomorphism types of representation there are of two dimensions.
I am just guessing, but there's this irreducible two-dimensional one already, and then maybe we can have a reducible one that is made up from this trivial and the sign representation.
Mm-hmm. That's two, and then there, or you can take two trivial ones or two sign ones.
Oh, yes, okay.
That's right. So those are all, so what happened here was that some of those four happened to have the same answer for 1, 2, 3, and I'd have to just check to see whether they do for 1, 2. Okay. So now I could write down those four representations. Actually, I think for 1, 2, you get three answers.
Oh, okay.
I think those are all possible. Because one of them comes from the sign, the trivial, one comes from the trivial plus trivial, one comes from trivial plus sign, and one comes from sign plus sign. And that's because this thing is taken to a minus one under the sign.
Okay, thank you.
Right, but the analysis is the same, right? Just as you were saying, we take this equation, we see that they're plus or minus ones, we write down all the ways to put plus or minus ones, there are three of them, and then we just have to check which of those three work. In this case, there were six, and only some of them worked. In this case, there were three, and they all worked.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other questions about this one before we move on to another? Okay. Yep.
Yeah, I get it. Thank you. Sorry, I was confused about something. Yeah, and I get it now. Thank you.
Makes sense. Okay, all right, very good. Okay. Okay, so let's see, so any thoughts about what type of approach might work here?
We can use again that a matrix is diagonalizable if and only if it's minimal polynomial decomposed in different factors.
What about looking at just the, like the definition is that conjugation gives you a diagonal, you know, the, why not just take powers of that, show that if you got zero, or it had to be non-zero to begin with, something like.
Okay, that sounds good.
If M is non-diagonalizable complex, then it has to have a Jordan canonical form, and it has to have a Jordan block of size at least 2.
Mm-hmm. This time we're over an algebraically closed field, so we have a Jordan canonical form available to us, as you say. So we'll need a non-trivial block. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so why don't we just spend a minute or so and see if we can use those three ideas to actually produce a solution or some subset of them.
What's the first sentence, the if and only if minimal polynomial has?
Distinct roots. To no more support. All right. Okay, so is there anyone getting somewhere on a proof to this?
Well, I think that we can, well, using the first approach,
mm-hmm.
we can write down the minima polynomial of M to the N, and then see that M satisfy that polynomial, right? And so that means that the minimal polynomial has to divide this one, and this one has different roots. So the minimal polynomial of M has different roots too.
Okay, let me see. So we're going to look at the minimal polynomial of M to the N, and we're also going to look at the minimal polynomial of M, right? Okay, and how were you saying they were related?
I'm not sure. I mean, like, we can write down P of X as the product of the different factors.
Mm-hmm. Right, and we know that these are all distinct.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if we put to the end there instead of the x, that equation equals zero. So that means that the corresponding polynomial, when we put x to the n instead of just x, annihilates m, right?
Okay, yeah, so let me see. So you're going to put the, right, so let me see if I'm understanding what you're saying. So since this is a minimal polynomial of m to the n, we know that p of m to the n is equal to zero, right? Okay, and so then we have some other polynomial that we can write, say R of X is equal to P of X to the N. Is that what you were doing? You're plugging in X to the N for X?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, and so then,
Yeah, and so then if all the lambda I's are distinct from zero, that means that x to the n minus lambda I has different factors. So that could imply that that the minimal polynomial of m has different factors because g of x divides r of x.
Okay, so let's see, right. So this is true, and hence, I was trying to write a cube. Okay, so Q of X divides R of X, right? Because they're both, because when you plug in M, you get zero. And let's see, So now you're going to try to argue that this R of X also has distinct factors.
Yeah, when we don't have zero among the lambda I's.
Okay. So you're saying that if no lambda I is equal to zero, Okay.
Well, actually, I'm not quite true about that. I mean, I don't know if that happens.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so this would be something to ask, right? Whether that's true, right? You could imagine situations where it might not be, right? Where if this is cyclotomic or something, and has roots like omega and omega squared, then you'd be starting to get multiplicities. Think. Okay, but in any case, if you could prove this, then that would, so this would be one approach, is to try to prove this lemma, and then it's clear that we're done, right? So hence, if lemma holds, then what do we have? So then Q of X also has to have distinct roots, which is a contradiction. Okay. So that's then something to think about, is whether you can prove this or not. But you reduce it to a single lemma. All right, so let's see, were there other thoughts, other approaches people had to this problem?
For the approach to the definition, I don't know if this goes anywhere, but it looked a little easier to think of it as the contrapositive, that if I had a non-zero determinant, then either or of the negative there.
Okay.
Still haven't thought it through enough. It could be a dead end. Watch out.
Okay. All right. But the idea, just getting started on what your idea is so that people can think about it, you'd be assuming that that you have a non-trivial determinant.
Yeah, and then either M is diagonalizable or MN is not.
Okay, and you would do it something like you have AM. A inverse is diagonal. Oh, sorry. A m to the n, A inverse is a diagonal. Right?
Well, well, what I was going to say is that I think that the lemma is true, right? Because like all the lambda I are different.
Ah, okay. So you're going back to this this lemma here.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and you're saying that if since all the lambda I are different, you can write down what the roots are for this new polynomial based on what they based on the lambda I's.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, so if we go back to trying to prove this lemma, then it's has distinct roots, so you've replaced x minus lambda I here with x to the n minus lambda I, right?
Yeah.
So they'd be lambda I times the nth roots of unity.
Yeah.
Okay, and so then Yeah, so then you just have to worry about whether two of those are the same, right? And so whether two of your lambda I's differ by an nth root of unity.
Yeah, but they are different, so we can just take the nth power.
Okay.
Oh, no.
Right, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I see what's wrong there.
Okay, all right. Okay, and then did anyone play around with using this third idea?
So I think that if you have a non-trivial block and you raise it to some power, what you would need is, so usually the Jordan canonical form will have the ones going down the off diagonal to show that an nth power of a non-trivial Jordan block has zeros going down that off diagonal. I think you can show that would imply that the eigenvalue on the main diagonal is zero.
Okay, so if J to the N is diagonalizable.
Right, if J to the N is diagonal, then lambda is, I believe you can then show that lambda is zero. That's what I would be trying to show right now.
Okay. Something's happening to my screen here, okay. So this would be another lemma. So in this case, so lemma. Then lambda is equal to zero. Okay, and is it clear that this would be sufficient? This lemma here also would suffice, just like this one would?
Yeah, the first lemma would be sufficient, I think, because the matrix is invertible. Well, it's not invertible if and only if when it has zero as any value.
And that's a diagonalizable. That's right. Yes, exactly. Yes. Right. And the Jordan blocks will behave independently, right? So it's so you can first decompose it into its Jordan blocks and then make the argument. And that's essentially step two here, because you can shift it here, use A to get it into its Jordan blocks, and then just work with the Jordan blocks separately.
I'll try it just one more time, but
okay.
Like,
all right.
So what you mark with green, like when you put there the end roots, I think that lambda I is like the end root of lambda I, right?
Sorry, you are correct. Thank you. Thank you. That does fix it. Yes. Good.
And so then what I said works.
Then what you said works correctly. I believe you are right. So that's, yep. Okay, so that's a proof. Thank you. I wrote it down wrong. Thanks. Okay, yeah, so that's one approach. And I think that this lemma also is true, and one can also prove that lemma. So that's a second way to do it. So both of these, I think, will work. Okay, any other questions about this one or thoughts?
If people have other questions, so I again have something, you know, basic to ask.
Okay, all right, very good.
I'm confused about the, so if you have the minimal polynomial has no distinct root, then this matrix is diagonalizable.
Mm-hmm.
I am confused because I thought minimal polynomials always don't have distinct roots. Like, it, by definition, they are minimal, so they shouldn't have distinct roots.
Yeah, but what happens is that if you take a matrix, if we take the minimal polynomial, that's the question of something which, so we're going to look for something that's a problem. So let's take something that's got a non-trivial Jordan block because, and is therefore not diagonalizable. So that should be the kind that's giving us a trouble. So why does it give us trouble? So if I try to write down a minimal polynomial for this matrix here, what is it? Well, the only eigenvalue is zero. So that's the only root I expect. But X itself is not a minimal polynomial because this matrix is not zero. I have to square it to get zero.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Wow, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Okay, other questions or thoughts? All right, so let's look at another one.
I have a question, Dr. Babson.
Okay.
If you have a ring homomorphism between two rings with one, then can you have a non-unital ring homomorphism?
Yes. Let's see. The easiest example would be something I don't know, I'm suddenly unable to erase, but anyway, so maybe I'll have to do this. But anyway, yes, so an example would be something a product ring. So if I take R cross, so Z cross Z, say, right? So that's a unital ring, but I have a map from Z to it that takes one to one comma zero, which is not the unit. Right.
I see. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, see, so apart, so now that we clarified that one, any other questions about what everything means or thoughts about how to approach this?
Well, we can see that the only two-sided ideals of the ring of matrices over a field is just zero or the whole ring. And so that means that if F is not zero, then F has to be injective.
I guess MN use notation that agrees with the problem. So MN. Okay, so is it clear to everyone why that is a relevant lemma? So where do I get a two-sided ideal out of this problem?
The kernel of a ring homomorphism is a two-sided ideal.
Correct. So if I take J is equal to the kernel of this F is a two-sided ideal. So J is equal to zero, or my entire matrix ring okay, and so the so this gives us two possibilities, so we're trying to prove that the kernel has to be everything. So we're only left with this case. Okay, so is that clear to everyone how that logic works? Yes, okay, very good. All right, and how do I eliminate that last case?
We can consider an nilpotent matrix. For instance, we can consider the matrix that has just ones over the diagonal.
Okay.
And so that matrix satisfies that. Well, let's say that matrix is A.
Okay.
So
but before we go through the detail, let's just make sure that it's clear what it is we're trying to prove here. So all I'm asking right now is we're assuming that this, so when J is zero, what does it mean for J to be zero?
That the function would be injective.
Correct, right. So then F is injective. Okay, and so you're giving an argument that F cannot be injective?
dimensionality.
Okay. Okay, and how do I know that dimension makes sense here?
But to use dimension, then we need to use that F could be a kind of our linear map, but that would imply that we're saying that F is fixing like the multiples of the identity or something like that.
Right, right. Okay, and so is there a workaround so that we can deal with the cases where it's not R linear? What other properties could we use besides dimension to try to show that this map, there cannot be an injective map?
Would we go by the determinant then? No, never mind. I take everything back.
Might work. Okay.
It would work?
I don't know. I'm just trying to think how you would use it.
I was thinking of like, never mind.
I particularly used like a lemma here that says that, you don't need to use the lemma, but it might be worth mentioning it.
Okay.
That it is that if you have you don't need to use this lemma, but that's how the idea came up.
Okay.
So I was thinking that like in a matrix, like in the ring of matrices, if you have an nilpotent element,
okay,
let's say in MNR, then that means that the element to the N is zero.
R is in here, and R to the N is equal to zero, yes? Mm-hmm.
Well, so if you take R in R.
I'm sorry, I misread what you said, right? So you said that and R to the M is equal to zero for some M, then R to the N is equal to zero. That's what you said, yes?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, is equal to zero, whoops. For some M, then R to the N is equal to zero, right, okay?
Yeah, I mean, like, you don't need that lemma, but that's how I came up with an idea.
Okay.
And so it was like, what if I can take a matrix in M plus one,
uh-huh,
such that A to the M plus one equals zero, but A to the N is not equal to zero.
Right, okay. So with A to the N plus one equals zero, which is different from A to the N, right? And so then its image would have to be zero, so you'd have to have something that was right. Okay, and is there such a matrix?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like, you can consider the matrix that has just ones over the diagonal, I think.
Yeah. The Jordan block, right? Okay, so those are all the ingredients. Do people want to try just spending a minute trying to sort of write this out? just to practice writing something out carefully, just spend a few minutes doing that. There are two things that I would recommend thinking about writing out. So first of all, this lemma itself has appeared on this exam as a problem. It's been a while, but it has happened. So that's a good lemma to understand, and both because it's useful here and because it's a nice one to be able to prove. And then just kind of pulling all this logic together to make it clear that this solves the problem is also good. And also, are there any questions about what happened with this suggestion? I mean, if we'd known this thing was R linear, then the dimension argument would have worked just fine. Or if, for example, our field had been finite, then we could have used such an argument.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Okay, great. Okay, let's see. So, so I'm suggesting that we spend just a couple of minutes where people try to write down one of two things. So either if you don't know how to do it, try to figure out or write down a proof of this thing, or try to assemble this into a clean proof, and then we'll just spend a couple of minutes doing that, and then we can talk about how we did it.
I'm sorry, I'm having a little trouble reading the text of the lemma. In R, okay. R is equal to MN over the reals, and...
Oh, this lemma down here. The second lemma, you mean?
Yes, down at the... Yes,
the second one. Yeah, okay, yes. Yeah, that's because I kind of jumbled it. So what it, this is an R, so this is supposed to say... so it's some power is equal to zero, R to M... is equal to zero. So when you multiply it by itself enough times, you get zero. So for some m, then it's actually enough to multiply it by the rank of, by the size of your matrix. So if you have a 3x3 matrix, and a to the fifth is equal to zero, then actually a cubed is already zero. That's what it means.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
For dimensionality, what way would be the quickest to think of these as modules or rings, or do you have a very...
You kind of have to be told what type of map you're allowing. So ring homomorphisms of, say, are, I mean... what can I say? If they don't tell you what that it's all linear, then there's no reason it should be. So you're missing that extra map. So let me see if I'm trying to understand what you mean. So basically you just have to be told. So if it's a module, then you know it doesn't have a multiplication on itself. It just has a multiplication by the other object. Basically, when I'm reading one of these problems, I would read carefully and make sure that what I want is a ring homomorphism. And here they were careful to point out that they're not requiring it to be unital, which is sometimes a restriction. But just having, say, a module homomorphism, that would be a considerably weaker requirement. Does that make sense?
Did you say lethal? Like that would kill the problem?
It would. It would be too. I think I haven't thought it through, but the type of argument we just used would not even come close to proving something like this if you only required that it be a module homomorphism.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. Yeah, thank you. That does help.
Yeah.
I have a question about one of the previous problems, but I don't know if it's too late to ask.
Okay. We could do that. Let's see. How about if we spend another minute on this one, and then see if people have comments about this lemma, whether that made sense, and then we'll go back to the previous one. Which problem was it, by the way, that you're?
It was a problem from 2016, problem 5.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So we'll go back to that in a few minutes then.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right, so let's just sort of see where people are. So anyone think about how one proves this lemma that the only two-sided ideals in the matrix ring over a field are zero and the entire ring? Maybe I'm not sure how to do that. Do you have an approach in mind that would employ that? Might be. Oh, the second lemma. Okay. Yeah. There it is. Yeah, actually, there are a couple of ways to look at this, the second lemma. Anyway, yeah, that one was. Okay, but anyway, so on the first lemma, were there thoughts about the first one?
We can use that matrix that if you multiply by the left, it gives you the AJth entry. Mm-hmm. Gives you the jith entry if you multiply by the right side.
Right, so it's got a one sitting out here. Right, and zeros elsewhere. Right, yeah, and so then you can explicitly construct if you have A, which is non-zero, A is in your ideal J, you can build any element of R. And what are you allowed to do? It's a two-sided ideal. So you just take your A and you start multiplying it on the left and right. It has some entry that's non-zero here, Aij. And you can multiply it on both the left and right and move that Aij around and just generate any matrix. So using so you're allowed to multiply on both sides, and you must do that. And you're allowed to add them together. Okay, so you can just be quite explicit about it. Okay. Any questions about that? Again, if you haven't seen that before, that's a good one to just write up. It's a good exercise because there's all these indices to keep track of, and it is therefore good practice writing things up cleanly. Any questions about this one before I go back to the one that was asked about moments ago?
Yeah, can you provide maybe a hint on the second lemma, at least?
Oh, yeah, okay. Right. Okay, people suggest, whoever suggested using minimal polynomials, do they want to elaborate a little bit on how that would work? Right. Okay, maybe I'll try to translate your comments from the chat box here onto the screen here. So let's see. So I guess what you have to show is that if R of the M is equal to zero, which is different from R to the N, then you've got some factor about the minimal polynomial. So then the minimal polynomial of this R here has to divide R to the M, right? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, n plus 1 is actually fine. But anyway, yeah, m is what I wrote. So divides m r to the m. But not r to the n. So this minimal polynomial is equal to r to the, say, n plus k, where k is positive. Okay, and how do we know that that's not possible if r is an element of mn? So how
the minimal polynomial of a matrix is of degree at most its dimension.
Correct, and that's because it divides the characteristic polynomial, which is exactly its dimension. Right. Okay. So did that clarify how one makes use of minimal polynomials to approach that? Okay. Any other questions or thoughts about this one then before moving back? Okay, so let me go back. To this representation problem. Okay, so what was the question about this one?
You were mentioning something about looking at all the non-equivalent representations of the dimension two.
Mm-hmm.
So I got lost there. I okay. Don't know what you mean.
Okay, so let me try that. So first of all, we can, so there are several facts here. So one is that for finite groups over the complex representations are all direct sums of irreducibles. That's a big theorem, but it's a good one. For finite groups, complex representations are direct sums of irreducible ones. And again, when I say R, everything that I talk about is up to isomorphism. Okay, so I'm always allowed a change of basis. Is that clear? Is there any questions about what I mean by that?
Yeah, and so like, do you mean, so when you said equivalent, that you mean isomorphism?
I do. I mean isomorphic as representations. That's right.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Which is equivalent to being isomorphic as modules.
Yeah.
Same concept, right. Okay, so that's what I mean. And so our reducents up to isomorphism. Okay, so that's one fact. Two, you can then, there's all this complicated but kind of fun scheme for getting your hands on all of the irreducible representations, which you should know about of a finite group. And for S3, the list is just three of them. So S3 has three irreducible representations up to isomorphism again. Okay, and I'll spend a day on representation theory, so we'll look at that a little bit more, but it's a good thing to review. And we talked about what those three were, and they have a dimension, there are three of them, so dimension 1-1, which is trivial, and that means that T of any element G just goes to the 1-by-1 matrix 1. Sine representation. These are the two one-dimensional ones, so that one has, let me call this T tau for trivial and TS for sine. So this takes things to the parity. So it takes, say, 1-2 goes to minus 1, and TS of the 1-2-3 has parity even, so this is equal to 1. Okay, so it just goes to plus or minus 1, et cetera. So that's the second one, and then it's got it one dimension 2-1. So that's the classification. And this one you can write out fairly explicitly if you like, also. Tr, say, And this you can write out explicitly in terms of the rotations of a triangle. But for now, let me just say that it exists. Okay. All right. So if I combine these two things, so then all two-dimensional representations up to isomorphism, well, there have to be direct sums of these things, and that means that I have to have either two of these or that thing, or the two-dimensional one. And I can either take up to isomorphism R, so I can either take two copies of the trivial representation, so that means that every element just goes to the identity on two by two identity. I can take a copy of the trivial representation and a copy of the sign representation. I can take two copies of the sign representation, or I can take this irreducible two-dimensional representation, and that's it. Every other isomorphism is isomorphic to those. I'm sorry, every other representation of dimension two is isomorphic to one of those. Did that answer your question? That's what I was saying.
Yeah, and like then how do you use that? Like, I wasn't sure, like, how do you use that to...
Why is that useful? Okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so what we were trying to do was that we had some representation T, right? And we were trying to figure out T of 1, 2, 3, let's see, what was the property we were trying to find out about it? Was it its Jordan form? Let's see. It here. There it is. Oh, there we go. So, the Jordan form of this. So it has a Jordan form. Okay, so what does that mean? So that means that I can take this matrix, whatever it is, it's some matrix, and I can conjugate it by something, and this is equal to some Jordan form, right? That's what it means to have a Jordan form, is that it's actually equal to one of these Jordan block matrices after you conjugate.
Yeah.
Okay, that's also what it means for two representations to be equivalent or isomorphic, is that you can get from one to the other by conjugation. Okay, equals Jordan. Also...
Oh, and like this, okay, sorry, like the matrix... That's conjugating, like, works for all the images.
Okay. That's right. You use the same matrix for all of the elements of the group.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay, yeah. Then I understand, I think.
Okay. So let me just finish writing it so it's clear to everyone. So, but also, T is equivalent to, say, TT plus TS if there exists some matrix A, so that for every element G you have, A, T of G, A inverse is equal to this other G, tau plus TS of G. So you have to use the same matrix on all of them. That's a change of basis. And that's what it means to be equivalent. So if so these two, if they're equivalent, have the same Jordan block form.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Other questions about that, or any of the others? Okay, start.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I know it's like close to the end. So I have a very general question about this test. So is there a good reference of what is gonna be, you know, what are the things we should know for the topic linear algebra? Like, is there a chapter of a book, like, of all the definitions and theorems and all that?
Let's see.
Maybe there is.
I mean, there's an official syllabus. There's an official, which is brief.
Yeah, it's not
very illuminating, I admit. But so there's that. And then there's on the official syllabus, there's a recommended text. I'm forgetting which one is up there now. It might be it's changed over the years. But there is one, and it's either Dummett and Foote or Lang, I think. And that would certainly have everything that you need.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if that's very clear, helpful, but in any case, it's true.
Yeah, thank you. Right. It's helpful.
Okay. Okay. And actually, if I can find something good, I'll try to, if I can find anything else, I'll try to link it to the page, but that's good enough.
Thank you.
Okay, any other thoughts or questions? Let me just summarize my plan. So what I thought I would do is, as I recommended, looking at these problems that we've looked at, I would strongly suggest taking one of them that you wanted to find out more about, or you thought you got it pretty clear and you just wanted to practice writing up, and writing it up cleanly just for yourself, just to practice. And so when I start tomorrow, I'd like to just sort of run through these quickly and see if anyone ran into anything interesting when doing that. And then maybe I'll run through just another exam like we did at the beginning of this time, just to see if it's getting clearer. And then I'm going to do a different topic. And I forget now if I already advertised one, but in any case, some other topic. Yeah, I think I'm going to do finite groups. So some problems with finite groups. And I'll try to get those up fairly soon, so if you want to, you can look ahead and see what's going on. Okay, any thoughts or questions? Okay, very good. Then I guess it's time, and I'll see everyone tomorrow.